the alleged link between former President Jacob Zuma's MK party and Russian military intelligence is a hot topic. We speak to SA Russia expert, Dr. Irina Filatova. Welcome, Professor. Sorry. Welcome, Professor. Professor John Steenhuisen, the leader of a Democratic Alliance, is one of those who has stated emphatically that Russian money has been flowing to MKP. What do you say? Have you seen any evidence of this? And why would Russia even be so interested in MK? What scenario could they have had in mind?
There are several things. First of all, John Steenhuisen was then not the only leader of any party in South Africa to mention the possibility or even being sure that Zuma's party was funded by the Russians. Musi Maimane said the same. He said that at least a few hundred million were spent on Zuma's campaign, and that this was a very sophisticated election campaign. And also Herman Mashaba said the same, that definitely there were a lot of money going into that campaign. And it is surprising for a new party to be so organized and to have so much money. From my friends in Natal, I heard that Zuma's party election officials, officers, were driving around in absolutely wonderfully expensive cars, and that they drove around to the smallest villages, that there were a lot of these cars, and that they drove to smallest villages where not the ANC and not the DA and no any other party reached. That their posters were everywhere in KZN, and that they were very, very visible. So this is a kind of a persistent topic. And the interesting thing is that the MKP never declared where the money is coming from. We all know that a party which has got more than 100 million donations which amount to more than 100 million, had to declare them. Now, Zuma and his comrades never declared anything. And IEC was asked about these donations and whether they have investigated them. And they said, no, we can't investigate because there were no complaints. And I don't know whether such complaints could follow or not. But one thing is quite clear is that no paper trail has been found, and everybody was so busy with the elections that nobody even tried to find this paper trail of this money. No documents are known, and we don't know whether they will be ever found or not. But there is, of course, every reason for Russia to fund Zuma and his party. What is its interest? Of course, they are ideologically very close, and of course, Zuma is an old comrade of Putin, and they met very often. And during Zuma's presidency, that South Africa, with the Russian help and Russian support, joined BRICS. And it is also true that it was under Zuma that an attempt was made to sign a deal, nuclear deal with Russia, which would be a very beneficial thing for Russia, and I will return to it in a moment. Since then, with Zuma in power and not in power, and after he was demoted, and even after he left the ANC, there's no doubt that people who are close to him, if you think about Duduzile, Sambudla Zuma, if you think about his close comrades, they all announced, declared on social media, in their posters, on their t-shirts during the campaign, announced their allegiance to Russia. Zuma's campaign even used the t-shirts where Zuma was standing next to Putin and they were shaking hands. I don't know whether you have seen that or not, but this t-shirt and people in it were all over the social media. Why would Russia be interested now that Zuma is not in power and he is very old, just out of old loyalty? I do not think so. I think that there was a direct interest. First of all, about this nuclear deal. You see, people who discuss it, and I must declare immediately that I understand nothing in nuclear power and nuclear plants and so on. I'm told by specialists that the model that Russians use for such nuclear plants, it's very advanced and it doesn't, no parallels exist anywhere in the West, and they are very good, very reliable, safe, etc. So people are quoting the costs, and the cost purportedly for South Africa would be about R1 trillion. You know, what is interesting to me in this connection is not even the cost, because the conditions of Russia's deal with any country, and it has been building these nuclear powers all over Africa now. It has been building them now. It has an agreements with Zimbabwe, Mali, Burkina Faso, and many countries in Asia, global south. This is what Russia is now interested in and where it is vying and fighting for influence. So the model of funding it uses is very interesting, and it is very beneficial for the countries which signed such a deal. The Russians pay 90% of the costs up front. They take all of the expenses, building expenses, construction expenses, exploitation expenses. They provide the stuff completely. They treat it as their own property. There's no participation on the part of the recipient, country recipient of such a power plant, except buying the energy. And it seems all very good, particularly if 90% are paid up front and the repayments can be stretched over many years, even over many decades. But here is a bit of a catch. Yes, to build a nuclear plant costs about 10 years. The exploitation period is about 60 years. To dismantle it costs a lot of money, and it lasts for another 10 to 20 years. So even one power plant ties up the country which it has to Russia for many decades, you see. What it means is very easy to understand if we look at Hungary, for example. Hungary leaves of Russia's energy. About 40% is provided by Russian nuclear energy in Hungary. And that means that whether it likes it or not, it has to support Russia. It depends on its benevolence. It depends on how much energy it will get. It depends on entirely in how it looks at the world and how it behaves through these eyes. And that is why Hungary said very clearly that it is not going to support any sanctions the Western Alliance has the Western countries has declared against Russia in connection with its invasion of Ukraine. So that is where we stand. That is where we stand. Good nuclear energy, if you want it, then you tie it, that country which gets it, you are tied, you have to realize that you are tied to a particular kind of policy. You are tied to a particular mode of behavior for many, many, many decades. You can't get out of it. I think that by supporting Zuma, what Russia could, if it did give this money, and it's highly probable, I think, that it did, what could it hope to achieve? I think that it was it couldn't count on just Zuma returning to power as president. And I don't think that it could count on outright Zuma's victory. It would be difficult, and I think the Russians understood it. I think they also could see easily that MKP is not, how would I say it, is not quite well organized. We can see it from what happened after the elections, when they just didn't emerge for one set of negotiations, were late for another sort of negotiations, and they are already losing votes. I think the idea was to get the Zuma faction back to the ANC, to show the ANC that this is an indispensable element, and to return Zuma to the ANC and the influence of that faction, together with its love and support, declared support for Cuba, Russia, and Palestine against the Western imperialism, as they formulated it. So if that faction returned to the ANC, and particularly if they returned to heading the ANC, getting rid of Ramaphosa, then that would have been the best scenario, because then the ANC would become the old ANC, where Zuma could dictate the policy, and where Russia would have a supreme influence. And this is, of course, against the context of the present divided world of the present day. So that's where we stay, and that's where the government of national unity must have been a complete disappointment for the Russians, because they treat the DA as a Western stooge and somebody who is completely a complete enemy of Russia. Well, it remains to work, Sierra.
Sorry to interrupt you. That's exactly what I want to ask you. What you can tell us about Russia's attitude towards the new government of national unity, and what that could mean for the road ahead for South Africa?
Well, I don't know that they have expressed any particular attitude. I don't think that they can. Do you still hear me? I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think that this is the result that they wanted. Definitely not. I'm absolutely sure that they are disappointed in the results of the elections for the ANC, because even ANC alone, without Zuma, would have been much, much better than what has happened. I think they will try to work with the ANC, with the part of the ANC which is radically inclined towards Zuma or his ideas, and they would try to support his elements, and they would try to work against the other elements within the government of national unity. They could, I I'm not sure, but within the ANC, of course, there are people who did not necessarily desert the ANC in favor of Zuma. They could stay within the ANC, and they could be still inclined to have a union with Russia, even if only for the nuclear deal. The nuclear deals are all secret. They leave a lot of space for graft.
Now, going abroad, after the Zelensky-initiated peace talks in Switzerland, the talk of peace negotiations between Ukraine and Russia suddenly re-emerged. What was that all about? How likely is that? And where would South Africa stand on that?
Chris, first of all, it was not peace negotiations. It was called peace summit. And I don't think that it was meant to be negotiations. What Zelensky wanted was a kind of an expression of solidarity with Ukraine on the part of the majority of the countries of the world. And this is what he was seeking. He was seeking the confirmation of some support for Ukraine, particularly on the part of the Global South. This did not work quite well. This did not work quite well because Switzerland invited 160 countries. Only 92 countries attended, and of course Russia was not invited, but China decided not to attend. And then they signed a communique, and I'll come back to that. Of these 92 countries, only 77 signed. I mean, at first, only 80 signed, and then three withdrew their signatures. So not a very good result, particularly because the agenda which Zelensky promoted was very modest. It was extremely modest. Food security, nuclear security, and prisoners exchange. That's all. Humanitarian goals. During the debate, these goals were even made narrower. They were narrowed to what? Nuclear security was narrowed to the return of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, the biggest nuclear plant in Europe, under Ukrainian control, where it has always been. Then food security was limited to the provision of the security of the Ukrainian ports in the Black Sea security of shipments of Ukrainian grain in the Black Sea. And then the prisoners exchange. Prisoners exchange everybody for everybody, return the civilians, return Ukrainian children. So even that agenda was not signed by so many countries. Now, it is interesting that, in particular, BRICS countries were very prominent among those which did not sign this communique. If we look at who did not sign, there was India, there was Brazil, there was South Africa, of course, there was Saudi Arabia, there was the United Arab Emirates, unexpectedly among those who signed were Turkey and Serbia and Hungary. So the agenda was so modest that even these three countries found it possible to sign, not offending Russia at all. But the BRICS countries didn't. I wonder why. What was it? Okay, they love Russia. They want good relations with Russia. They want Russia's cheap oil and gas, etc., etc. South Africa is not getting even that. But I think that one of the most important thing, one of the most important reasons could be completely different, and that is that on the 14th, the summit took place on were 15th and 16th June. And on 14th June, just before this summit, in order to somehow show Zelensky and everybody who was listening that you can't speak of any of questions of importance without Russia, Putin made a speech in the Russian Foreign Ministry. And what he spoke about was a peace plan. And the peace plan was quite amazing, I must say, and it was the first time that he formulated it. What he offered was the withdrawal of Ukrainian troops from the Ukrainian territories which Russia only partially occupied, which is Donetsk and Luhansk regions, and Zaporozhye and Kherson regions, including even such things as big city of Zaporizhia, which it never occupied. It does not occupy Kherson. Now it wants the whole Kherson region. So what he declared was that as soon as Ukraine agrees to these conditions and as soon as it starts withdrawal of the troops, we shall declare a ceasefire and we'll start negotiations, as if there would be anything to negotiate after such a step. And of course, NATO was Ukrainian membership of NATO was absolutely unacceptable. So why did Putin offer this plan? And why he offered it on 14 June, just because the summit is quite obvious. He wanted to divide the West. He wanted to say, look, Europe, he spoke a lot about Europe. Europe is more or less occupied or colonized by the United States. And we want a new security system, which is Eurasian security system, which would include both Russia and Europe. Now, why did he say that? Of course not for Ukraine, not for the benefit of Ukraine, and not for the benefit of the Americans. He said that for the benefit of the right-wing parties, which obviously had a very strong showing at the EU elections, and which are rising throughout Europe. So many of them are pro-Russian, many of them are right-wing pro-Russian parties, nationalistic, traditionalist, etc., etc. So that is one of the reasons that he conceptualized such a security system, which would exclude the Americans. Let's divide the world. We have Europe, the whole of it, Eurasia, and you have your America, and we'll leave you with the with Latin America or South America, if they want to. So that's one idea. He also spoke of BRICS as a possibly alternative system of security or a global organization which would be of a new kind. It would be a multipolar organization, possibly instead of the United Nations, I don't know, he didn't say that, or alongside the United Nations, but obviously it would be a system, an organization. He spoke that it would be a multipolar organization, but where there wouldn't be any place for countries which are not members. And my understanding of this new vision of BRICS as such an independent organization regulating international relations would be based entirely on power. I mean, it would be ruled by who might is right, So that is the new multipolar world that we are going to see. So that is where South Africa has to choose. Does it want to live entirely in the world where might is right, and where a more powerful country might say, look, I'm actually interested in some of your mines. Can you please give them to us? Or South Africa itself, as a stronger country in the neighborhood, may say, look, some sort of, well, Lesotho or Swatini does not make any sense. We'll just occupy their territory. Do we want to live in such a world, or do we want to live in the world where territorial integrity and sovereignty still matter something? I do not know. It's for the South Africans to decide, and for the government of national unity. You see, that is where one of the major contradictions may lie.
Thank you. That was SA Russia expert Professor Irina Filatova, speaking to BizNews. I'm Chris Stein. Thank you, Professor.